All right, I'm here with my main man, Anton Marks. This is Smooth Drama at its finest, special edition, Saturday afternoon, evening. What time is it there in London, man?
It's nearly 2:30, 2:27.
All right.
In the morning.
2:30 in the morning, because this,
yep.
This is how Anton rolls. He never sleeps. So how you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm good. Working hard as usual, man.
All right. Well, you know, I peeped out what you was doing, and I'm thankful for being one of your beta readers. Talk to me, man, about your latest project. But I'm being remiss here. I'm starting off without telling the people. Just in case you didn't know, you're tuning into this special 2:30 in the morning. If it's 2:30 in the morning for you, you already know who this guy is. He's Anton Marks, the infamous author. Not infamous because you did anything bad. Infamous because you're so good that they hate on you.
I like that. Yeah. I like that.
Hey, you know, that's
right.
The way it is.
Well, my most recent project is a young adult contemporary dad fiction novel. Why I decided to write this is when I was growing up, I was a voracious reader. I love books, love reading.
Yes, sir.
But as you would think, or as you would know, years and years ago, trying to find an author that I could relate to as a young man was very, very difficult. Well, not even difficult. It was nearly impossible.
Yeah. And why would you say that is? Why would you say it was
At the time, there wasn't a lot of black authors doing. I think possibly there were some. There were some classic pioneers like Samuel L. Delaney, who was doing science fiction work back in the 50s and 60s. So there were black speculative fiction writers, but not many, and the ones who were doing the work, somebody like me growing up wouldn't be able to get access to their work. So the books I were reading was all white authors. I mean, great books, don't get me wrong,
right?
Great books, but not
right.
Not black authors. So I always promised myself that when I got into a position, I would write the books I'd love to read when I was 12, 13, 14.
Yes, sir.
And that's what I did.
All right. So, I mean, I know for you, you call yourself a writer of, and you made up your own genre, urban fantastic.
Urban fantastic, yeah.
Yes. Mm. Now, you want to know something funny? There's actually, and it's something that I'll be talking about here in the future.
Okay.
We have been, we write, because I'm not on your level. I'm a comic book writer, but we have been termed Afrofuturists. Our genre is called Afrofuturism.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I didn't know that we had a genre. Apparently, we don't get to name it. Afrofuturism, according to Wikipedia and the people who termed it so, led by a scholar, Mark Derry, in 1993, this guy that doesn't look like us, he said that Afrofuturism is a cultural aesthetic, philosophy of science, and philosophy of history that combines elements of science fiction, historical fiction, fantasy, Afrocentrism, and magic realism with non-Western cosmologies in order to critique not only the present-day dilemmas of black people, but also to revise, interrogate, and re-examine the historical events of the past. You didn't know you was doing all that, did you?
I think I had an idea.
I thought it was hilarious. I mean, just cutting to the chase is a white guy that naming what we do, putting us in his box.
Well, you know, that's how people work. I mean, we don't feel comfortable unless we've been put in some kind of box. The book business is definitely like that. I mean, a lot of our authors get told, well, you know, where do I put you? Work. Where do I put your work? Because they're so used to having these kind of defined categories that if you don't fit into it, they think, well, your work will not sell or will not be popular, which is not true. We know that.
Right. Yeah, we know that. You know, as a comic book publisher myself, you know, and someone who we've sold thousands of books, but every time people come up, they say, "Hey, you guys are a pub. You're black publisher. You make black books. Good for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's good for you."
Yeah, that condescending tone. You see, the thing is, the world is rapidly changing, and we're leaving a lot of these kind of people behind. All of these gatekeepers who thought that they could stop us from doing what we need to do.
Yes.
Have been around so long that they don't even realize that things are changing. The playing field is being leveled, and anybody with some initiative and commitment can go out there and produce work and get it in front of thousands, if not millions of people around the world.
Oh, well, they know. It's just acknowledging the change, and once again, like you said, they will tell an author, "Hey, how do we market you?" I mean, it's like you said, I'm a voracious reader also, and we didn't go to the store saying, "Hey, can we get some white books?"
Exactly. 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 That is exactly what I say to people. I mean, I read, and I've read authors of all origins and ethnicities, and you're going to go buy a book that interests you, whether it's written by a white author or an author of color.
Right.
You don't go to the library and necessarily ask for a black book. I mean,
right.
Yes. You'd love to have a black book that caters for your interests. But if not, then there's a book out there which you're going to read and you're going to enjoy, whether it's white or black. As I said, all of these barriers these people have created, they're not real. Honestly, they're not. And it's all in our minds. And we've been told these things for so long that it's becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy. We kind of believe that, yes, our books won't sell. There are categories, and if we don't fit into a particular niche that these people tell us we need to fit into, then we won't sell books. And it's just not true. And I found that out, and you have as well, DJ Smooth.
Yeah, so now let's talk about, speaking of selling books, someone, you sold a few copies in your day. Tell us about this latest, The Last Prince of Akibulon.
Yeah.
Yeah. First, I want to say the cover is magnificent. When I saw the cover, I was like, "Ooh," made me itch a little bit. I was like, "Man."
Thank you. I think the cover came from my love for comics, because I mean, obviously that's another thing that I grew up reading.
Those white comics.
Sorry?
You was going to the store.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean,
you got some white comics.
Funny. It's funny because I had a collection back in Jamaica that was, if I had that collection now, it would be worth literally thousands and thousands of dollars. Yes. But within that collection, I had, even then, maybe unknowing to me, I'm looking for characters that look like me.
Right.
So I was looking at Luke Cage.
Yeah, some Luke Cage, some Black
Panther. Yeah, I was looking at, you know, the Falcon, you know?
Yeah.
And although, you know, you got pushed the popular, the really, really popular books like The Hulk or The Fantastic Four or The X-Men, and obviously I love Storm from The X-Men. So even though we were being pushed these comics, even as a teenager, I was still looking around for these elusive black characters. And obviously, I started collecting Black Panther from the early Jack Kirby days.
Yes.
So I've still got my collection of Black Panther. And I always, in my heart, I always felt, you know what? One day, it will become popular. He will become popular. And there you go.
Yeah.
2018, you know, Black Panther is going to be a reality. So, in film. So, right.
Well, I mean, when we talk about, like, Falcon is a regular, and right now, I mean there's a whole nother argument where they make established characters black or Latino or Asian. I can say with all my heart and soul I do not like it. I mean I look at it as blackface, but that's a whole nother argument.
Another discussion,
in the genre. I'm like, if you see the objectifying race and making a character a certain color, and then you throw predispositions that are negative that surround this ethnicity, then the character fails all the time, because basically you write a human story. And what the character looked like shouldn't matter.
Yeah, I know. And there's two camps, isn't there? I mean, but as you said, it's a discussion we may have to do someday. Me and you should sit down and really talk about the pros and cons of it. But yeah, I know what you're saying. I do know what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it. As a construct of what we talk about, what genre do we put you? How do we sell your book? You just say, hey, The Last Prince of Akiva Lam is about what? And the story sells itself. You don't have to say, okay, well, the color of the skin of the character sells it. I mean, because you can have a black character and the product would be, I mean, like you said, Luke Cage. There was an iteration of Luke Cage, I say about 8 years ago, where he had the gold tooth with the C.
Yes, and he had sagging
pants, whatnot, and he had the ring that said Cage. And I'm like, that's garbage. And it didn't last long.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I know exactly what you're saying. I mean, maybe back in the 70s. Maybe that would have worked, but not in the 2000s. That's going to be something. But you know, as I said, these things come and go, don't they?
It's
kind of like the creative powerhouses of like DC and Marvel. They try to gear their books to what the present vibe is in the world. And they do that because commercially it makes sense. Well, so if a particular thing is in vogue, then they will go for that, and that's just how it is.
Well, yeah, I would kind of argue against that though, because once again we're talking about, if you have a writer and he'll pitch a guy who doesn't have his ear to the streets, who thinks that hey, this will sell because such and such people would can relate to that. It's like you do understand that those people that you're trying to relate to do not read.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Mm. And the people who do read reject such negative stereotypes, and they represent like a 1% of the population. But
in a way, that's why I think the work that you do and comic creators, independent comic creators, do is very important, because you know you are more. You're out there. You're kind of closer to the pulse of the people than these guys in their ivy, you know, in their ivory towers.
Yeah. Well,
you have a better appreciation.
Right. I wanted to, you know, when we we get sidetracked all the time.
Here we are.
The Last Prince of Akiba line, which I want you to tell the listeners about what your premise is, because there's a marketing premise that you have here that I thought was awesome, and I may borrow it. but tell the people about the Last Prince of Akiba line and what your intention was when you wrote this book.
Right. Well, as I said, the Last Prince is contemporary science fiction, so it's based in a world that we know, the world we live in now, and basically the main protagonist is a young boy called Joshua Nagon. He's African, and he grew up in England, in London. Now he has a history that he doesn't know about. He only finds out about it when he's 10 years old. And he realizes that his people, his mother and father and his tribe, are an advanced race of hybrid who he is. So, you know, the kind of marketing premise I use for the story is, Who are you? You know? So it's a question that a lot of us ask ourselves. And Joshua asks himself every day, who is he? He's supremely gifted inventor. But he has his negatives too. He's human, although
he's
a hybrid alien, but he is a 14-year-old boy who makes mistakes, and he's living in a society that may not respect who he is as an individual and as a black boy. So it's about him discovering who he is, and also discovering what his destiny is. So it's going to be a 3-book series. I mean, it's full of adventure and, you know, all of the stuff that when I was growing up, as I said before, that I want to read. I'd love to read. So I'm hoping young people will go out and get it and read it and enjoy it and anticipate the next books to come.
Well, so you said it's a 3-part series. Now, do you plan on trying to, and I know we've talked about this before, like trying to option this as a film? Is there any interest in yourself doing like an animated series with this, or is this something where you do the books and maybe if you get a chance at a deal, maybe you'll go with a studio, or would you prefer to go the indie route?
Well, I'm open to suggestions. I mean, I ideally, and I think anybody would want their project to be optioned as a movie. Live action would be absolutely fantastic. But I'm open to what the possibilities are, and I know the sky's the limit. And
well,
to get the attention of the movers and shakers, obviously it's connections. You have to make connections, but you know, money counts and success counts. So if there's a book out there that is popular, then they will take a look. I mean, just like they've done to a lot of graphic novels out there and comics.
Right.
If it has a following, then they will come calling. So it's for me to generate the interest and the excitement to get people, adults and teenagers alike, to, I guess, just go out, buy the book, talk about the book, spread the word on the book, and, you know, the possibility of it becoming a film is there. But as you said, you're talking about animation. Of course.
I mean, now my question,
a Japanese company says yes, I'd definitely go for that. Yeah.
Well, see, my other part of the question, and maybe I phrased it wrong. Do you think maybe because you're in London and mm-hmm. you have the opportunity, because in Europe in particular, there would be more of an embracing of new ideas as opposed to over here in the United States. We don't embrace original ideas here. We regurgitate the same thing over and over again. You think it would be easier there as opposed to trying to get a deal done here, Hollywood style?
Yeah, I'm not. That's a difficult one. I tend to think that we're so connected now. We're so connected. I mean, America and the UK. That I think if there's interest in it here in the UK, there'd be interest in it in the US as well. Because everything is so linked, and a lot of the studios here in the UK have all got offices in the US. So I mean, if I can make an impact with it, I think because I'm based here, although I have intentions of coming over to LA and seeing what kind of connections I can make there as well. But yeah, I think if I get interest here in the UK, then I think the ripple effect would go to the US. I'd be able to make some good connections there as well. So I don't think one is better than the other.
Okay.
To be honest with you.
Well, yeah. Now, see, I bring that up because we've seen over here in the United States there have been some prominent American actors, Samuel Jackson in particular, who have been critical of British actors mm-hmm. coming over to the United States and taking roles, whatnot. I mean,
yeah.
I think it's kind of foolish. It's like, it doesn't matter where you come from. I mean, I, like you said, we're the same people. We think we're
yeah.
connected, but there's a, I want to say a tribalism.
Yeah, you'll get that though. Yeah. I mean, no matter where you are, you'll get that. But I think
because it's a real thing. I mean, because you know, guys will say, "Well, I mean, but yeah, he's from London. Does that? I mean, does it count?" And I'm like, "Well, what you mean? It's like I thought we were all the same, but it seems like if you're a black person in London as opposed to a black person in America,
mm-hmm.
There's some fictitious wall of difference between us."
Yeah, I can see why. You see, you know, that indoctrination. I mean, we're not talking about indoctrination that has gone on for like 10 years. We're talking about hundreds of years of indoctrination where
yes.
these people have tried to tell us that we're different.
Well, they haven't tried. They have told us that we're different.
Yeah. I mean, and you try to get that out of the collective consciousness of black people, not just in America, in England, in the Caribbean, in Africa itself, is very, very difficult. But I think on that issue that it makes for a more vibrant and interesting environment when you have creatives from all over, black creatives from Africa, from the UK, from France, from the US, from Canada, doing work together, sharing resources, and working together to create the things that we're trying to create, to make the impact we're trying to impact. So I don't think it's a bad thing, but as we've said, there's going to be people who think, yeah, there's a downside to it. I don't think so, personally.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it like it's a collectivism that has been a long time coming, that I don't see what's bad or negative about it at all. I'm like, hey, so long as we're being represented, nothing else counts.
It makes us stronger too, I think. And also just more open to new ideas, because I'm going to come from the UK to the US with a different perspective.
Yes.
Although we do share so many things, I will still have a different perspective in maybe, you know, the environment I grew up in, you know?
Yeah.
And the same with, you know, a creative from the States coming, you know, to Europe, to the UK. There's going to be a particular perspective that I can use, I can build on. That's going to make my work even more rich, more textured. That it wouldn't be like that if I'd stayed in my little corner had no influence with nobody else in the world. So,
right.
You
know. Let's talk about that perspective. I mean, you know, because I don't know if I want to say that Britain is European in its perspective. Because I think Britain has always been an entity within itself.
That's correct. Yeah, that's
and,
true.
And so we say British sensibilities and perspective, as opposed to we say our American perspective, which is segregated also, because there's a Western United States, and then there's a Southern, Midwestern, and East Coast. It's weird because we're all in the same place, but approach things differently. How do you think you would be different at coming here as far as your work being perceived? I asked the hard questions, man.
No, well, there are elements that, for instance, in the story, there's a section where Joshua and his friend, Brick, well, Brick is actually American, right? Born in America, and he comes to the UK because his father's a businessman. So so Brick is American. Joshua is, let's say, in English. And in this particular scene, they're scoping out a warehouse, which Joshua thinks some secrets are kept that would kind of enlighten him about who he is. Now, these two kids, 14-year-old, are watching the warehouse, and they're about to leave when the police come, pull guns on them, you know, shackle them, search them.
We're familiar with that here. We're familiar with that here. Very familiar.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm trying to say. That, I mean, that is one perspective that out of so many others in the book itself that an American reader could understand. I'm not saying they would have experienced it, but they could understand because they've seen it on the news, they've heard about it, they've read about it. And a similar thing here in the UK. A reader isn't necessarily going to say, well, yes, I've been abused by the, you know, the Metropolitan Police, but it happens. Yeah. People have died through it. So people understand that. So just that instance, there is an understanding on both sides, whether you live in the States or you live in the UK.
Yeah,
definitely. You know, so, you know, it's, and human emotion is another thing that no matter who you are or where you are, you're going to experience it. You're going to experience love. You're going to experience death, you know, happiness, sadness. I mean, these are all things that we share. No matter where we are, no matter who we are, no matter what the color of our skin is, we will share it. So as an author, you have to call on the similarities a lot of the time, so that whoever the reader is, they can feel connected to the character.
Right. So now, speaking of your book, when do you expect it to be ready to come out? Have you set a date and the time?
Yeah, it's June the 5th. Okay. So another 2 weeks.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So are you excited? I mean, do you like get those butterflies excited every time you put out a book?
Yeah, I do, because you want to do the best work possible, don't you? And no matter what, as a creative, you're never satisfied, are you? You produce the work, you review it, you go through editors, you go through loads of iterations of the project. But even at the end of it, you still think, yeah, it's ready to go, but I could do this or I could do that. So yeah, I'm always excited. Never resting on my laurels, never feeling that, well, yeah, this is the greatest piece of work ever. There's always room for improvement. There is a stage where you reach where you got to put it out there and you got to get it to the readers. So yeah, I'm excited. Every time I'm just hoping that people want to read it and they want to tell their friends and they want to read it too. And they want to get excited as I am about the book.
All right. So how do you approach that? Like you're writing this project. What's your mindset, your approach? I know each one of these stories, they come from you, but I mean, do you approach it like with the enthusiasm and hunger as your first one, say, or is there a difference?
That's a good question. I think every book is different, but the enthusiasm levels are always high for me because I write what I want to write. I'm not cynical enough to go out there and look and see what is selling and produce something similar. I mean, there are certain genres of books that I'm really, really into. So you'll find me actually writing my stories and my novels within those genres. But that isn't a cynical thing on my part. It's just that I love these genres.
Right. Well, you write what's in you, what brings out that enthusiasm.
Exactly. So every book, I've never written something that I feel that I shouldn't have after maybe going halfway through it. I'm always excited to write it and to get it completed. Always.
All right. So, I mean, you say you're coming to the States?
Yes, I will. And I will come with Last Prince as well, because I mean the schools need it, and I mean I'd be just another voice of the many voices out there who, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean
the kids can look to and say, well, you know what, you know, this author has written something that I can really, really relate to.
Well, it's funny you bring up the schools as someone who does work in the school system. You know, some of the books that they read are some of the most depressing things ever. Like the kids they're reading To Kill a Mockingbird, and you know, it's so depressing because one, as a black kid, you read the book, you realize that the guy on trial is innocent. He's guilty of one thing: being a nice guy and helping someone who ultimately turns on him and says that he raped and beat her. I mean, not that something like that hadn't happened before in the past. It's a phenomenon here in America. I'm sure it's worldwide, but here in America in particular, a white woman saying a black dude raped him, looked at him wrong, whistled at him, whatever. It's caused many a riot here.
Yeah.
And this book, I say it's so depressing because it's clear he's innocent. It's clear everybody knows she's lying, but the black dude goes to jail anyway. And I'm like, I'm arguing with the English teachers, like, look, why you got these kids reading this? I mean, I know you want to teach lessons, but can we get a happy ending? Can we get a book where the black dude don't go to jail for being innocent?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'm not sure when Harper Lee wrote that book. I think it was in the 60s, isn't it? I think.
Yes.
But it's just a reflection of the times. And we keep getting reminded of these things constantly. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but we need variety, don't we?
Yes.
Yeah, we need variety, and that's the problem.
As they say, variety is the spice of life, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it'd be good to see an author who has written something different.
Yeah. You know? Well, I mean,
something different. So.
Well, it's one of those things where you talk to kids, and you know, a lot of black kids, they don't see themselves as heroes.
Exactly.
And it's distressing that you can't conceive of yourself as the good guy in any genre.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why it's so important, as I said, for you guys when you produce your comics, you know, your graphic novels, you know, represent, which you do, and it trickled through slowly but surely.
Well, I think, you know, once again, it's a feeding frenzy, because when I find a black author who, I mean, you're just writing your stories that are in you. And I don't look at it like, oh, it's a black book. I just look at it like it's a science fiction book. I'm a science fiction guy, so I tend to lean towards science fiction. And we are sadly represented in the science fiction genre. We are way underrepresented. How do you say it? Underrepresented,
yeah.
Yes. I mean, it's horrible, right? I mean, because when we talk about space, I mean, you can pick a film. There's in Star Wars, there's Billy Dee Williams, the one black dude. The New Hope, there's I'm trying to think of the guys, John...
Boyega,
yeah. The one black dude. I mean, it's like one person.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think we talked about this as well, that if we don't produce these worlds and populate these worlds with our people, then nobody else will. I mean, it's our responsibility. And the thing is, we may not be able to get as wider audience as the larger companies. But every small effort, every small project will add to the consciousness. So what you do, what I do, will all add up.
Yeah.
And that's what it's about.
Oh, I'm of that belief. I mean, obviously, I think, like you said earlier, when you said that if we don't do it, who's going to do it? You can't ask folks who don't represent you to represent you.
Exactly.
There's a logic that's missing. It's why I started off talking about, you know, you name your genre. I'm urban fantastic. That's my genre. It's like I get to name myself, as opposed to some guy saying, "Well, you guys are Afrofuturists." I don't know what that means.
we choose ourselves, and that's
how it should be. Yeah, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, but yeah, I want to say, man, as always, it has been great talking to you, and you know, I'm hoping that we can continue to talk. I'd like to do this like every other month or so.
Anytime. Any time at all, just come. I mean, I love to. It's just good knowing you're there doing what you're doing. We can be rapping, and the listeners are there also, just listening to what we're talking about. I hope we're not boring them, but yeah, it's always a pleasure, man. Always.
I hope that we make the listeners happy.
Hope so too. Yeah. What I wanted to say to you as well is, if you have any listeners who are interested in The Last Prince of Al-Kebalan, what I will do is, the listeners from you, if you direct them to me, then what I can do is, on the 5th of June, when I launch it, any of your listeners who want a copy of the book as a ebook, I will send them an Amazon voucher to cover the costs. Just for you and your hey, listeners.
You're gonna make me cry over here.
So if any of your listeners want to get the ebook on June the 5th. It will also be hard copy paperback as well, but obviously it'll be much more expensive as a paperback.
Yes.
But if you're going to get it as a Kindle Amazon download, then it will be less expensive. Well, but as I said before, direct them to me
with emails. Right.
And then what I'll do is, I'll send them Amazon vouchers so they can actually go and purchase the book. Well, the only thing I'd ask is for them to give it an honest review. That's the only thing I'd ask of them. Yeah. Okay. So your listeners who are interested, you direct them to me with emails.
So why don't you direct them? Tell them where they can email you, because they'll be listening to this. Tell them where they can email you.
Well, you can email me on Marksman Studios, @gmail.com. So I'll spell it: MarksMan. That's Marksman. Then Studios, which is STUDIOS, number one, @gmail.com.
Now, Anton is not saying that, he's not questioning your academia. He's not saying you can't spell. He's just saying, just in case there is some confusion on how to say it.
Yeah, we don't want it to get lost in translation. So, yeah. But if there's any difficulty, then My man, Smooth Drama, is there, so you can contact him. But if you want to contact me directly via email, that's perfectly fine. Just mention
Smooth Drama's
name, and then we're good to go.
All right. Well, hey, man. Thank you once again. And so, you know, when mine comes out, because my editor has it now, so once I've gone through the editing process and he's told me how bad I messed up and what I need to fix, and once I fix it, you will get one of the first copies of my book.
And also, what I'll do is, when do you think you're going to have the...
We're going to be coming out around the same time.
Right, okay. Well, we need to talk about having you on my podcast as well. So,
man, look, you already know. Whenever, whatever, it's done.
Yeah, okay, man. So, thank you, man, again. Thank you. We will talk soon.
All right, man, you take care and you have a good night. And you might want to get some sleep in, man.
I will do.
All right.
Have a good one.
You take care, man. Peace.